some others at headquarters left out of town for that. Do they?
Okay, I'll send it to him on a machine as soon as we untie the machine from President Nixon. You ready, John? Gentlemen, there's no need for introductions, I'm sure, with Dr. Gary Latham. He's here to answer your questions. You each have a copy of the statement, so we'll start with Mr. Maloney.
What does it all mean?
Well, that's starting right at the heart of the matter, isn't it? First of all, we found these things this past Sunday. And what does it all mean? Takes a little while to come up with, probably a decade or two. But at least the completion of the Apollo program will be required, and that's assuming that we have as many missions as are now planned. What appears to us is a good working hypothesis is that there is a point within the moon near the lunar surface which, under the strains produced by tides on the moon, that is the bulge on the moon which is produced by the attraction between the Earth and the moon, which under those strains pops. Now, this happens with such remarkable regularity that we are, I would say, surprised. We have on Earth very few circumstances in which earthquakes are produced in a series, resulting in records which are nearly identical to one another. And yet that is the case with these 14 events. The records can be laid one on top of the other and you can match the signals almost identically. It means that the source location is very constant, and it means that the manner in which the energy is released is very constant. Now, we made the association first by matching the character of the records. We noted this extremely remarkable similarity from one event to the next, and then plotted them on a time scale and found, to our surprise, that every one of them, without exception, occurred at time when the Earth is closest to the moon, at perigee. It is at that time that the moon bulges toward the Earth with its maximum amplitude. I think I gave a distance in the release, the order of 20 or 30 inches. It is also at that time that most of the transient events have been seen to occur by astronomers studying the moon with Earth-based telescopes. These transients have been reported for hundreds of years and are being reported today, and most of the sightings are described as sudden appearances of color and disappearances of those color patches. And there are a few hot spots on the moon with which these are related. One of them is Aristarchus. That is, I think, is the one with the most activity. None, to our knowledge, have been reported from the region where we believe these events occur, and that region is in the crater Fraumaro, about 50 miles south of where we plan to land next time. I would stress at this point that there is considerable uncertainty in that location. The reason is that we have one seismometer on the moon, four seismometers, one seismic station operating. On Earth, if a seismologist attempted to make detailed estimates of the location of earthquakes with one seismometer, his colleagues would hoot him out of the room. So we're forced to a considerable number of assumptions and cross correlations that make this estimate very uncertain. But nevertheless, if true, the location occurs on the lunar map very near an extensive network of rills that run down the middle of that crater. And if you had to put your finger on the map at a place where you would expect seismic activity to occur on the moon in this region, you would put it, I think, in the middle of those rills. They're the most prominent features which have the appearance of fractures, although we don't know that they're fractures. And so we are encouraged, at least, to the possibility that these fractures are somehow related to the source of the seismic activity. Now, what happens in an earthquake at shallow depths is that you have opposing faces of a fracture locked in place by friction. Stress builds up, and suddenly those faces move one relative to another. They break apart and they slide, and that is the mechanism by which the seismic energy is generated. In this case, it's possible that the tidal strains build up to the point that the friction no longer holds these surfaces together, and they just pop, they slide one relative to another. If that's the case, you would expect such sliding to occur when maximum tides occur, or about that time. But the peculiarity of this source even goes further. We can divide our 14 events into two subsets, and we find that one event occurs at each perigee, followed by a second event after about 2 to 4 days, and all of the first events are identical, all of the second events are identical, and the two sets are nearly identical. So it's such a repetitive source that it appears that you've got a pop and then a second pop, and the first pops are always exactly the same place, same relationship to perigee, and that the second pops are always the same. Now, we're in view of the fact that we're not able to locate these events with certainty at all, we're extremely anxious to have the people who are concentrating on trying to locate these transient events focus on Fomaro for a while, particularly at times of perigee. And the next perigee is August 17th. So you would be doing us a favor by noting that fact and requesting that people who are doing this sort of work focus on the Fomaro region 3 or 4 days in advance and 3 or 4 days following that period, so that we can, if we do see a glow, a transient event of some kind, and we can correlate it with the appearance of one of these seismic events, then of course it'll help us a great deal saying where these occur. So we're most anxious for that to happen. If we do see it, the transient events have been interpreted as the escape of gases of one kind or another from within the moon. It seems to me, and I might say was one of those very skeptical of the reality of those events. I assumed that they were just changes in the lighting pattern as the sun's angle changed, the local slopes were illuminated a little differently, and that these color changes were probably related to that sort of effect. But I certainly have changed my mind. The fact of seeing these seismic events correlated with maximum tides on the moon, and the fact that the transient events that have been observed also correlate with that period, makes me think that there must be some reality to these events. If we do see them in the area of Fomaro at times of seismic activity, then it's pretty strong evidence in support of the fact that this is a gas, perhaps cold gas or hot, that's escaping through cracks in the surface that are opened at times of maximum tide. The cracks exist, but they're closed rather tightly and begin to open with the maximum bulge. That would be very exciting to us. It doesn't mean that there is volcanic activity below the surface necessarily. This could be a very cold gas, could be carbon dioxide, ice that is vaporizing. But nevertheless, it would have a great deal of importance to us in trying to say something definitive about lunar tectonics.
Zach?
Well, the volatiles that would very possibly have formed at depth within the moon, if there were any heating going on early in its history, would have percolated up through the lunar structure and to a point where the average temperature is below its freezing point. And after all, average temperature below the surface of the moon is very, very cold, very, very low. And so you could collect a residue of these frozen gases in the form of ice it's recently been speculated that such a layer may exist with a surface, say, 100 meters below the surface of the moon. And then if you suddenly expose that ice to warmer temperatures by opening a crack, an orifice of some kind, reducing the pressure over it, you could get escape of those. Now the ice would tend to become in gaseous state and could escape through these orifices. Now that's very speculative. It's one way. Another way is that you have a volcanic material down there which is under pressure and can only escape. The volatiles, the gases, can only escape at times when you open up some kind of an orifice. If there are these local hot spots, and many people think there are, then that would be a logical explanation.
What would be the relationship of the Earth and the moon on January 31st, February, something like that, when they get to the moon? Is it possible that this effect could occur while the two astronauts are on the moon in Apollo 14?
We've looked into that. It happens that if they do depart as now planned and land at the time now planned, it would follow perigee about 8 days. So the time the astronauts would be on the surface would be well outside this zone of activity, which is unfortunate from our point of view. We'd like to have them orbiting and taking photographs at the time. On the other hand, I suppose there will be a natural concern for the safety of the astronauts being in the vicinity at a time when these events might occur. These are rather small, very small, and I think the astronaut would have to be standing right in the zone, right in the region where this occurs, to feel it. Under no circumstances would any of these events topple the limb, say, or shake him off his feet, or throw him down into a crater or something like that. He's pretty safe. No, because it's happening very, very slowly. No, it just gradually builds up over a month. I would guess that a greater danger to a person in the area would be his being enveloped by gases than the physical vibration of himself or his vehicle. And we have no evidence, remember, that there are gases in this area escaping. This is purely speculation as to the nature of the transient events, and the possibility exists that we will see some of these transient events in the area of Fromaro. If so, then may be related to such activity. Well, perigee the average interval between perigees would be about 28 days, one lunar cycle. And that varies during the year. That would be the average time interval.
Well, if someone were looking for these transient events to occur in front of Mars, what would they expect to see?
Well, normally, what is seen, the sightings are described, as I said, as changes in color. The sudden appearance of color patches, orange and red glows that suddenly appear and disappear. And that's really all that's known about them. Some people discount them entirely. Others believe very strongly, and I think with some fairly good evidence, that there is something meaningful to them, because they normally occur in certain areas and are not distributed all over the moon, and have been found to occur at times of perigee primarily. So that while I was one of the skeptics too, I'm changing my mind.
Paul?
That I don't know. Dave, have you know any? See, they're not really looking through spectrographs. They're looking through, it's ordinary optics that they're looking through. Of course, some of them do. Remember the observation of the Russian Kozyrev, where he saw, he believes, gas C2 and C3 escaping from the peak in the center of Alphonsus. But that was one of the unusual experiments. Normally, the group of people I'm talking about are just looking through telescopes, and they see sudden color patches, but they don't have a spectrograph that tells them what part of the spectrum it's in. That's how they're usually described, glows, sudden appearance of these colors.
Well, are they essentially useful that they could be photographed?
Yes, some of them are. I suspect they have. This is not really a thing that I know a great deal about. I don't know whether anyone could show us a photographic plate with one of these events on it or not, frankly.
Sorry?
Dr. Latham, would you explain to me, and I don't mean this question to be as naive as it's going to sound, how can you have large masses of rock held together by friction, and they separate sporadically, and yet go back together and form an identical pattern when they separate the second or the fourth or whenever you see the other? How can they do it unless they were...
I'd like to ask you to go home and think about that, and if you can come up with an answer, let me know. That's why I say it's remarkable that the pattern is so repetitive. Now, in fact, on Earth, we observe very infrequently, but occasionally, a series of earthquakes, for example, from the Himalayas, in which the signals are almost identical, one to the next. So it can happen, but it's a very unusual occurrence. And here, these are so nearly alike. They're not all the same size, but the signals, the wiggles, are so nearly alike that it has to be just, I'm hard put to explain it. I frankly can't. Well, you would expect that blocks grinding together each month with such forces to produce significant seismic energy ought to be somehow changing, altering their form of contact. So the regularity explains the regularity in the times of occurrence, but it would seem to me that they're no, the amplitudes change. Yes, they do change. They're not all exactly the same size. They are among the biggest events we've seen so far. They are not the biggest. They are definitely quite different from another category of events which we now believe to be meteoroid impacts, always did believe them to be meteoroid impacts. These are distinctly different in character and very much alike, identical almost, and it is a very unusual source that would do that. Hard to imagine the source.
The reason they cited it is not an external force that perigee happens to bombard that certain area.
I think that the trying to imagine that would be produced by meteoroid impact happening to strike in the same place on the moon exactly, and happen to strike at perigee, is the chances are so remote as to be discounted.
Shortly after either the limb or the asteroid who struck the moon, was this loud gong sound that lasted for how long it lasted. Someone postulated that the interior of the moon could be made up of just large blocks of rock. Does this tell you anything about that?
If you looked at these signals on a compressed time scale, they would look identical to the LEM and the S4B impacts. So that same ringing character is present and has more to do with lunar structure than the nature of the source itself. What does it have to do with it? Well, our best interpretation of the lunar structure, which produces this unusual reverberation, is that there is extensive heterogeneity, that there is fracturing of the lunar material to some depth, at least a few miles, and that in addition the waves can travel with very high efficiency. They're not damped out as they are on Earth. So what happens is that you generate a seismic wave and it travels over very great distances, bouncing off of various blocks and discontinuities, and just keeps ringing back and forth. So that it is the two circumstances which lead to this unusual signal. One, that there must be, we feel, quite high degree of heterogeneity, either fracturing or blocks of differing composition. And the fact that waves can, seismic energy can propagate in the moon with very, very high efficiency. On Earth, they're damped out rather quickly. And exactly why on the moon they're not damped out, nobody knows. We have a hunch that it must be because water's absent. Fluids of all kinds are absent. There are no gases. And probably it's the presence of those fluids in between rocks that causes the damping on Earth. You can't escape such fluids on Earth. They're everywhere, whereas on the moon it's extremely dry. So we think that that's what leads to this very unusual character of signal at present, and I don't see any reason to change that as a result of finding these moonquakes. We have just, as I said on Sunday, confirmed this and have just put into the press release our first request that be done. I don't know exactly what studies might be made. I would hope that spectrographic studies would be made of that region. Well, the very first indication that some of the events matched closely, I guess, was 3 weeks ago. And we came down to Houston a week ago with the intent of playing out the largest events at high speed so that they could be correlated in detail. And actually obtained those records last weekend, so it was, I guess, Saturday or Sunday that we were able to really confirm what we thought might be true. We had no idea that they matched so well with these perigees, though, and in fact have found no exceptions to that match.
This is not a wrong, it's a rather a growing effect where you just kind of, over a period of time, it just slowly happens, right? Rather than a boom, boom, boom.
No, it's a pop. It is a pop at the source. It's the bulge, the strain is building up, and you have a weakness, a fracture in the surface, and these are locked in place by friction until suddenly you exceed that friction, and they just do that. And seismic energy is radiated from that point, and by virtue of all of this scattering, you get the reverberation that you see. That's our hypothesis. It is possible that what we're really seeing is a more prolonged source related to the escape of volcanic or gases of some kind or another. But I think that's much less likely. I think it is really the mechanical slippage of these things very suddenly that's producing the signal we see.
What's the double pump? Is that exactly the same fracture?
It has to be very close to it. It may be a slightly different place, but these two subsets, one subset is the group that occurs first at each perigee, and the second set occurs second, are very much alike themselves. These two sets are very close to being the same. And so we have two exceptions to that, and where we only have one pop, and we're looking for the second one. Now we have some candidates that may be that they were small enough that we didn't include them in the group that we played out this last weekend. There would be a lot of possibilities. It may be that the first pop readjusts the strain in the region, leading to the second pop. It may be that you simply have two different fractures. There's a very extensive network of these rills. I shouldn't call them fractures because we're not sure what they are, but a very extensive network of these rills, and it may be that the second pop is simply on a different one close by. Now, why do they always occur in that 1-2 sequence? I don't know.
Well, when the Apollo 14 seismometer in place from Mars, if it's full, it should be, would you be able to get to
the machine? Well, yes. It takes three, in principle, to get a good location. But with two, we'll do an awful lot better than we do with one. So we'll get quite a bit more information on just where this hot spot is from that. If in the meantime we're lucky and get correlation with the observation of transient events, we'll say it before that. But assuming the present station continues to operate and we have the two operating simultaneously, then we'll be able to pinpoint this source very much more closely.
Well,
Yes, I would. Oh, no. No. No, it isn't really. there is a general release, a reduction of pressure in the area as a result of this solid tide. But which would tend to open cracks. But it isn't that process. It's the sudden dislocation along these things. And it wouldn't. Now maybe as they relax again, you would get a sudden pop backward. But it isn't the very slow flexing that we're talking about. It's the very sudden slippage along these things that is occurring. It may be exactly that. It comes up, pops one way, and relaxes and pops the other. It averages between 2 and 4 days. But it's variable in that range.
Is the energy generated by this sector on the surface of the moon where Apollo 14 might be explored? If it turn over with this large small rock that turn over, then they might pick them up, and you could tell by the fact that if it turned over something, give you some indication of the intensity of it, or get some more light on what's going on.
Unless events in this same series have occurred in the past with very much larger magnitude than they are now. No, these would not be big enough to be felt by an astronaut 50 miles away. They would not dislodge rocks. I might say, though, that we have seen evidences of trails produced by boulders rolling down slopes on the moon, and we have not been able to say whether these are seismic induced by seismic vibration or whether they're induced by very near meteoroid of internal origin, I should say, versus seismic energy produced by meteoroid impact. Both are possible. But in this case, these are small events relatively, and would not dislodge rocks, would not be expected to. Of course, in the past, larger events may have occurred.
There's nothing that Apollo 14 could do then, physically, from their observations, to shed much light on this phenomenon.
I would say their best hope is to photograph from orbit in detail. And if we see evidences of rather fresh-looking cracks in that region, then that would be very, very good evidence. It has been, there have been papers in the literature by investigators who have postulated that earthquakes were produced by tidal strains, and probably they are, but they are a very, very small, nearly insignificant part of the total number of earthquakes that occur. And in fact, it's hard to really prove that these events are produced by strains. What's done is to just statistically relate the events, the occurrence of events with the tide, and see if there is some meaningful correlation. But you're never able to really prove that they are or are not produced by tides. The Earth's tide is less than the lunar tide, and so that it's a smaller input function. But my guess is that some of these events, earthquakes, are produced by tides. They're rather small events, and would therefore be equivalent to the lunar tide, to the lunar events.
That it, Jim? One more.
Well, I would say the remarkable aspects of this series are the facts that they are so nearly identical. They're separated by 28 days or so, and yet are nearly identical one to another. So that is the remarkable repeatability of the source function that is unique. It's not without parallel on Earth. For example, the series that I mentioned in the Himalayas, but it is a very, very unusual occurrence. And on Earth, we have other forces which are producing most all of the earthquakes, and so that the few small ones that may be produced by tides have not been studied very much, or at least they haven't been. We haven't been able to separate them out very well. So both the generating mechanism, that is tidal strain, as a principal source of seismic activity, and the very repeatable nature of the source are extremely unusual.
Sure, go ahead.
That's correct. This is the first time that we can state unequivocally that there are moonquakes. And we hope, we fully expect, that we will find more of them by studying the remainder of the signals. And we have some evidence that we may have another set produced perhaps at a different region. But that's very preliminary now, and won't be able to confirm that for another few days at least.
Can you discuss the
Well, it's simply another set of signals which have in themselves characteristics very much like this first set, but slightly different. And in that category, and that set is also quite different from the third set we believe to be produced by meteoroid impacts. So they seem to be of the same nature, but not this identical match. And they themselves don't match one to another, so that if indeed these are moonquakes also, it means that there are other regions from which at which they occur. And we're just going to have a difficult time being very specific about those regions until we get that second station up there, and hopefully a third.
Dr. Latham, thank you. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Small enough motion here. I guess Lyon will be pretty active next time.
Well, I talked to Tom.